You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
America can never elect a candidate who, like Hillary Clinton, did government favors for those giving her family and her foundation massive amounts of cash.
The steps that were taken when Secretary Clinton went to the State Department were unprecedented. It's important to keep in mind, this is a nonprofit philanthropic organization. 90% of the cost of malaria drugs has come down because of the work of the Clinton Foundation.
That's Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and Robbie Mook, campaign manager for the Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, talking about the Clinton service in the State Department and the Clinton Foundation. That's a story that is continuing to unfold. It'll be the first thing we talk about here as we get our weekly update on the November elections on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Welcome back. Joining us for our weekly update on the November elections, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist. Molly, thank you very much.
Great to be here with you.
Mark, let's start with the story that's, I think I heard it this morning, called Pay to Play, regarding access to Clinton Foundation donors while Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. What do we know?
Well, the AP basically did analysis of the emails and all of the information there, and they concluded that of the people that Hillary Clinton met with while she was Secretary of State, if you look at the meetings she had that weren't with people that were already in government, a majority of the people she met with were Clinton Foundation donors, which just reinforces this, you know, horrible notion that the Clintons are completely transactional in the way that they conduct business in government, and that they use their positions of power as a stepping stone to enrich themselves and accumulate more power. And it just, at every step of the way, as we've looked in this email scandal, it confirms rather than contradicts, you know, the worst images and conceptions we've had of the Clintons. And this is just, you know, another piece of evidence showing that people have good reason to think that Hillary Clinton is unfit for office.
Molly, is this perhaps the stuff that the Clinton campaign was most deeply concerned about coming out from the email scandal?
Well, who knows exactly why Clinton set up a private server to obscure all of her information from normal government oversight. I think that this is a prime example of why she was incentivized to do that, why she had that incentive. These meetings that she had, I think it's good to put it in context of what we know about the Clintons, too. Going back, they've never had jobs really outside of government service or no meaningful work outside of government service. And the money that they've made has been tied almost completely to government service, either people paying these politicians for their speeches or for access. And that is what is so troubling about the Clinton Foundation, is that it really shows how access to the government and the closer you are to the government can be a path to financial wealth that is unimaginable to most Americans. Hillary Clinton was very proud or really upfront about how when they left the White House, she said that they were bankrupt. They are now in the wealthiest top percentage of the American public. And it's not because they're making anything or providing any kind of noble service or product for the American people. It's all about those ties to the government. And if you look at everything we know about the Clinton Foundation, whether it's the way that Bill Clinton received donations from people who were interested in doing business, and he set up the meetings with the powerful people in different countries, or the way that countries themselves gave money to the foundation while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and while she was overseeing important issues dealing with those countries. I mean, it's just a complete compromising and a huge threat of how much we should be caring about keeping government separate from financial wealth.
I also just want to add, there's something very unique about this with regards to Hillary Clinton. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, you know, Bill Clinton is a, you know, guy who tells a lot of stories that he needs to tell to do what he wants to do. But Bill Clinton is not a guy that walks around morally conflicted about what he does. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, like there's a report in Politico right now, and there have been several other reports sort of trickling out, that the campaign is just proceeding under the assumption that people don't care about the email. And more than that, within the inner circle of the campaign and Hillary herself, there are all these reports that they think they're being unfairly targeted by this email scandal and the fact it continues to persist. If you go back, there was a video like 15 years ago where Hillary Clinton told Stan Lee of Marvel Comics, of all people, that she would never do email because of all the ways that she's been unfairly investigated. Well, here we are. We have a scandal because she was clearly trying to hide email from traditional oversight. So there's no doubt in my mind that, that part of what rankles is not just the actual corruption that we see in these emails, but also that Hillary Clinton really does deep down truly believe that somehow she's been unfairly, you know, prosecuted for being in a remarkable position of power and doing things that, you know, would send all kinds of other people to jail.
In that vein, Molly, how do you evaluate the media coverage of the latest discoveries from the Clinton email scandal?
Well, I was actually going to follow up on what Mark had just said about how the Clintons feel that if they just lay low about this email scandal, they can just coast to the election. And I think that is sadly true for a couple of reasons. One of them is that this is a somewhat complicated story that requires a great deal of knowledge. And so many political reporters are obsessed with who's up or who's down in the polls or what's happening in this state or that. They don't have the time to actually dig into the scandal, understand why it's significant, think about how it could affect issues under a presidency. And that complication is not just for the journalists covering it, but for people who read journalism or watch journalism. People don't want to really take the time to understand the seriousness of the scandal. And so combine that with the fact that a lot of people in the media are just friends with the Clintons. I mean, you have people who are actually former employees of the Clintons, donors to the Clintons, and they are in high positions of power in the media. They're not going to have that same bloodlust for getting to the heart of a story like they will with a Republican politician. And that's a shame, because it would be good if our media could show any semblance of even-handedness in understanding the threats and opportunities of the two major candidates. And they just don't seem to be interested in doing that with any degree of dispassion or impartiality.
There's a couple of key points I would make about the current Clinton email scandal, which centers around a trove of 15,000 emails that the FBI just sort of, you know, found under the sofa cushions or something like that. Well, the main reason why we're talking about this scandal right now is because the Clintons tried to suppress these emails from getting out. I mean, clearly they did not want, you know, emails, you know, that would detail, you know, Clinton donor foundation access and all kinds of other things the way that these emails do. And Hillary Clinton, you know, testified under penalty of perjury, I think last fall, that she had released all of the emails. Now, whether or not, you know, that this proves she's guilty of perjury is a separate question, but it's definitely an issue. And it's definitely a situation where the Clintons didn't want to discuss this and tried to suppress it. So that makes it all the more important that we do discuss it.
I understand that the State Department has refused to release certain numbers of emails until after the election. What's going on there, Molly?
That's not quite how I would put it. They have agreed to start releasing them as early as October, which would be before the election. The problem is that every time they say that they're going to release emails, they fail to meet their own deadlines. So everyone is expecting that it will start after the election, since all the previous times that they said that they would release emails, they would be weeks or even months later than they promised. But they could come out earlier than the election, but nobody's really counting on it. And of course, after the election, it is safe to release whatever, I guess. or that you, presumably if Hillary Clinton is elected, it would be safe to release whatever information. A lot of people are frustrated with how slow the State Department has been about releasing information, how much of a drag it has been, how much effort it has taken. This conservative group, Judicial Watch, which has been responsible for much of the email release, they have had to spend a lot of money and a lot of effort to get to the bottom of what many of these emails are and just get them released. And they come out in these huge batches where they're, again, kind of difficult to go through. But there's a lot of interesting information in these emails, everything from finding out that Huma Abedin, who is Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman, left classified information, like in a taxi in India, to finding out that Hillary Clinton requested taxpayer-funded military transport from her home in New York down to D.C. because she didn't want to take the commercial shuttle that runs literally every hour between New York and D.C. that would have been a fraction of the cost. These are interesting details. They are things that would be otherwise scandalous in any other year, and people should keep focusing on them.
One other thing on this, and it has to do with probably what would have been a minor story otherwise, but apparently there's a U.S. sailor that has received a one-year jail sentence for mishandling classified information. Has there been any response from the Clinton camp on this, Mark?
Yeah, no, I actually emailed the Clinton campaign about this earlier this week, and of course they did not respond. I mean, briefly what happened here was a Navy machinist took six photos of the interior of a nuclear submarine with his cell phone, and this was a violation of classified law. It's clearly a violation of the way we're supposed to handle classified information. On the other hand, this information that this sailor allegedly possessed was the lowest level of classified material, whereas Hillary Clinton has something like 22 emails in her that have been released that were on a private server that contain top secret information, which is the very highest level, and then there are, you know, are well over 1,000 that contain classified information. You know, in the grand scheme of things, it's impossible to argue that Hillary's crimes weren't far more severe than this poor Navy machinist. You know, but at the same time, the law is the law, and the judge, you know, reading the law, even though his lawyer specifically invoked Hillary Clinton and her crimes, you know, the judge read the law and applied it, you know, I think fairly to this guy. The issue here, though, is the selective prosecution and the fact that you can be an incredibly powerful politician in this country and not be accountable to the law. And the secondary issue, of course, is that Hillary Clinton is running to be commander-in-chief of the U.S. military. You know, what kind of message do you think that sends to the armed forces and what it does for their morale when, you know, you are sworn to uphold the Constitution and yet, you know, the people that are in charge of you are not bound by the rule of law that the Constitution supposedly stands for? I mean, it's got to be incredibly disheartening.
It's not just the military, too. It's actually the entire federal bureaucracy that is held to these standards, and they know that they would be treated much differently. I wanted to mention that I talked to an attorney who handles classified information. This was months ago. He handles these cases involving people mishandling classified information. He said there was absolutely no question that Hillary Clinton had broken the law, but he kind of hoped that she would get off because it would really help all of his clients who inadvertently mishandle classified information. But what he didn't count on was that there are basically two standards. The normal people, you and I, we will still be held to normal law governing the handling of classified information. If you're very wealthy, if you're elite, if you have ties with the people who matter, you will be able to get away with breaking the same laws that we would get thrown in jail for.
One other question for you, Molly, and it's unrelated to the scandal, but it is related to Hillary Clinton. You have made some observations recently about Hillary Clinton's religion and her abortion stance. What did you see?
Well, at the Federalist, we published a piece that was related to someone had done some journalism saying that Hillary Clinton lived her faith by being pro-choice or something to that effect. Hillary Clinton is very proud of her Methodism. I don't know how regularly she goes to church, but she's always been talking about how she's a Methodist. She was raised in that church body. And her views on abortion are pretty extreme, even by the standards of the United Methodist Church, which was an early supporter of killing children in the womb. But she takes it much further. She is trying to make it so that taxpayers will have to fund the ending of human lives after they've begun, which is the way that we prohibit that in this country is through a complex series of legislative riders and amendments that are commonly referred to as the Hyde Amendment, because Henry Hyde was the author of this. And she would like to repeal all of those, forcing taxpayers to pay for people to end the lives of their unborn children. And she also supports partial birth abortion. She claims that she could theoretically support limits on abortion near the end of life, but when you ask her how, she provides these loopholes that are big enough to drive a Mack truck through. And compare that with what happened with the United Methodist Church this year, where they ended their relationship with the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. That's a euphemism for the abortion group. And the Methodist Church is finding that their previous views on abortion were too extreme, even by the standards of that church body. And Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, seems to be getting even more extreme, going from the safe, legal, rare of the first Clinton era to just a bold and aggressive pro-abortion stance in response to people's attitudes on abortion becoming more negative.
I also just wanted to add, this is having broader ramifications throughout the Democratic Party and especially down ticket as well. I mean, as we've seen, is the Democrats have radicalized philosophically and as a matter of their party platform. I mean, they came out against the Hyde Amendment, which had, you know, sort of been a longstanding agreement in the abortion wars, as it were, that, you know, at least there would be no perceived public funding of abortion, and everybody could agree on that. Well, Democrats have come out against that now, and now it's becoming an issue. Obviously, this was an issue for Tim Kaine, who had previously been against it, and he's been questioned on this several times, and it's, you know, as Molly's pointed out before in this program, you know, he's being very slippery about whether or not he still, you know, supports the Hyde Amendment. And similarly, Kate McGinty now, who is running for the Senate in Pennsylvania against Pat Toomey, has been dodging this question big time, because Democrats don't want to answer this because they know it's actually politically unpopular to be this radical on abortion the way that the party and so many of the core Democratic funders and interests are pushing the party to be.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections. When we come back, we will turn to the subject of Donald Trump and his poll numbers in some of the battleground states. Stay tuned.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California. Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas. Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a confessional Lutheran. The CLCC.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting a weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. We were talking before the break about the inconsistency between Hillary Clinton's religious position and her radical position on abortion. LCMS Life Ministry is countering not only the radical position, but also that I think abortion ought to be legal, even though I personally oppose it position as well. They are devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in the church and in the culture at large. That's LCMS Life Ministry. Find out more about their work and some of their great pro-life resources at lcms.org/life. That's lcms.org/life. Molly, the latest story on Donald Trump, turning to him, is that he is trailing in some very key battleground states. What does this mean for him and for his future prospects at the White House?
Well, it is interesting to see the polling coming out. I think that no one could say that things are going terribly well for Donald Trump at this point with the polls. And I'm glad that people are focusing a little bit more on individual states rather than the national polls, which mean nothing because we don't have national elections. We have state-by-state polls. And when you have state-by-state polls, you get these pretty dramatic changes in how people in one state are looking at something versus another. Hopefully, the Donald Trump campaign is taking this information and responding to it. I mean, just for the sake of running a competent campaign. And Kellyanne Conway, who is the new campaign manager, is in fact a pollster. And you saw that this, I guess it was last week, was the first time that the Trump campaign acknowledged that they were behind in the polls. First off, Kellyanne Conway straight up said that they were behind in the polls. It was okay. They knew that this meant that they had to fight and that this was lighting a fire under them. And Donald Trump implicitly acknowledged it when he said that he is Mr. Brexit. And Brexit was the campaign in Great Britain to leave the European Union. It was always polling behind, although not by a significant margin. And it ended up winning the day on the actual voting day. And so he was saying, I might be polling behind, but I'm going to come ahead on Election Day. And so the Trump campaign says that their actual campaign is going to start after Labor Day. We're coming quickly upon that. And so we'll see how they start focusing on these battleground states. Currently, they've been running a lot of rallies and work in states that are already going to be on their side, such as Texas, which is where Donald Trump was last night. He had a huge rally in Austin. They're going to need to campaign in these battleground states if they want to win them.
What do you make of it, Mark?
You know, even my boss, Bill Kristol, who runs the Weekly Standard and is known for being one of the biggest anti-Trump pundits in Washington, D.C., recently wrote a column yesterday, I think, saying don't count out Trump yet. The reality is there are so many structural factors in this race. You know, it's generally kind of a change election because people are kind of dissatisfied with the direction that the country's headed in. And they're certainly dissatisfied with, you know, broad aspects of the Obama presidency, and further, Hillary Clinton is just a terrible candidate. So, you know, there, and plus, you know, so much of what's happened in politics in the last few years has been determined by, you know, unpredictable news events. So it's way too early to say that Donald Trump doesn't have a shot and can't still win this thing. Clearly, though, the odds are against him, you know, absolutely, when you look at these polls. But, you know, again, we've seen a lot of change happen really quickly, and the fact that we've seen a lot of change happen really quickly is about the only constant we can point to in politics over the past couple of years.
He has started to buy some television ads. What is he doing? This is a long time coming, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, people have been wondering about this forever. I mean, you know, what was his campaign spending money on if they weren't, you know, buying TV ads? And so far, he hadn't done anything to really, you know, to respond to this criticism that he wasn't done anything. Well, along with the staff shakeup that happened last week, there was sort of a quiet announcement that came out that they were actually going to do their first ad buys in a couple of swing states, states that Trump needs to win. However, the ad buys that they have made so far are very small. Not the kind of thing that will make a dent, you know, like a few $100,000 here and there in different states, whereas Hillary Clinton spent $13 million just advertising during the Olympics coverage. So we'd have to see a lot bigger ad buys to expect any sort of, you know, potential shift in the race with these ads, and so far we haven't seen that.
Molly, I'm just remain mystified here because I know that they pride themselves in running an unconventional campaign, an uncampaign kind of a thing. But television ads are really the bread and butter of this, especially as we get closer and closer to the polls. What's going on?
I think one of the issues is that things went extremely well for Donald Trump during the GOP primary without running any ads. And so there might be a false sense that they can continue the good work that they did there without running ads in the general. The big problem with that is that the mainstream media was more than happy to help Donald Trump take on, you know, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. They thought it was kind of funny and fun what was happening in the Republican primary to see all of this unrest and tearing down. However, the mainstream media tend to be just unbelievably liberal. It's foolish to pretend that anything other than that is the case. And so they're much more protective of Hillary Clinton, whereas think of Hillary Clinton. A lot of what's happening in this campaign, since both candidates have high negatives, is you're trying to drive the negatives for your opponent down even further. Hillary Clinton has been running a brutal television campaign, as anyone living in battleground states knows, of running these unrelentingly brutal ads against Donald Trump. Then combine that with a mainstream media coverage that reinforces that message because they share her political views and they share her dislike of Donald Trump. And they think he's some kind of unique threat in a way that they don't think Hillary Clinton is. On the other side, you have Donald Trump. He doesn't have the ads. He certainly doesn't have the media coverage that can even comprehend the idea that a woman who compromised national security and has led a life of corruption is a unique threat to the Republic. So they're not saying that when they cover her in the news. And you just are left with this kind of blank open space of people looking for some sign of, some of that message. They know that they don't like Hillary Clinton. They know that they think she's a unique threat. They know that she's a progressive who will take power and run with it. And yet they're not seeing that reinforced in their media, and they're not seeing that reinforced in a traditional campaign operation where you would be running these really smart, effective negative ads. Again, the Trump campaign says and has always said that they would kind of wait until after Labor Day to start a campaign. So I think that certainly they have been unconventional, and people in D.C. hate that. Now the real test is, will they be able to be unconventional, be true to themselves, and win? And if not, you're going to have a lot of people angry that they didn't take some of the traditional political advice about how to do it. If they win, they will have shown a lot of people to be worried for no reason, and they can take all that bragging for years to come. We'll see how it goes. But this point in the polls, I mean, much further behind than Mitt Romney was, and we know how Donald Trump views Mitt Romney as a loser. I think people are going to start expecting to see some better numbers, lest they feel anger at what exactly is going on here.
You can read Molly and Mark Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway is senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Hey, thanks as always.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to revive our series with Pastor Will Whedon called Setting the Lord's Table, talking about the things you see in and around the divine service. We will also get a review of the new Ben-Hur movie from Pastor Ted Giese. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. Talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. we provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
What would you say if someone asked you to explain the Trinity? Would you begin with Scripture, the creeds, or some clever analogy? And how are Christ and the gospel at the center of this fundamental Christian teaching? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Beckwith has written a new book in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic series. It's titled The Holy Trinity. You can save $5 by pre-ordering The Holy Trinity at logia.org, L-O-G-I-A.org.